time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 25th of September. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by Island, the stockist of Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local gifts, art and clothing. You'll find them at Ocean View Road, Oniroa. On Saturday the 25th of September, Matthew Tetley-Jones talked to local board candidate Herb Romanyuk. He talked to daughter Ray from Junk to Funk, Josephine from Waiheke Adult Literacy, and Rosalie Hennigan from Waiheke Community Library.
Yeah, I was just discussing that with Herb Romanyuk. But anyway, how are you, Herb?
Good morning, Matthew. So nice to be here.
Do you want to just cozy up a little bit closer to the microphone? Yeah. We've only got a clockwork desk here, and it doesn't really record that well.
You're pretty well organised at the moment.
Well, I'll tell you what, who's been organised, the graffiti artists. I hear they've swooped on your campaign poster last night.
That was interesting. I've got a red nose, which probably may be because of my indulgence with one of the spiritual things on the island, or the wine and so forth, but it is quite funny, and I think, gosh, that's good graffiti art and urban art, which must be encouraged around the place, but perhaps not on posters, but I take it with a bit of humour. It is funny. Thanks, whoever did it.
I guess they're entitled to their opinion anyway. It's been quite a busy election. A number of candidates standing. It's hard to poke your head out from amongst the rest.
Well, you know, one thing about the island, we have got a lot of people standing, and it shows people are interested in community affairs. We've got a vibrant community. Gosh, there isn't an issue that somebody hasn't got an opinion on.
Yes, indeed.
So it is. It's actually a matter of harnessing all this talent on the island and hopefully positively, and perhaps there's a bit too much negativism coming through and people always against something and they're protesting and so forth. Gosh, we've got a beautiful island.
Yep.
We're so lucky being out here. Let's all get together positively and enjoy things and enjoy projects that we might think of that enhances the island. I sort of feel so often we are very negatively involved, and I hope that culture will change. I'm sure it will, because there certainly is the talent in Waiheke for that to happen.
Now, what do you see as the priority issues for the next 3 years?
Well, I think we're in uncharted waters, Matthew, because we don't know what this new board will be able to do. It's sort of part of an Auckland City Council type of board and part of the community board. You know, we advocate, and yet we've got more seemingly or supposedly more delegated powers enshrined in legislation, but what are they? And then we've got the council-controlled organisations with professionals in those bodies. I think we've got to try and stake our claim to the island. We've got to persuade people that we know what we're talking about, we know what's best for our island, and before any larger decisions are made, we've got to be consulted in a real way. But it's working together with rather than working in opposition. And I think with professionals of the council-controlled organisations, they're professionals. And I think having a conduit, some sort of working in with them will be the answer to that. But I think that's a three-year effort.
So you're saying that the main priority of the local board will be really local government? It will be actually redefining that role.
I really think staking out a claim and seeing what it is, because we don't really know how much of what we consider as our role will be accepted by the regional, by these controlled organisations, and by the Auckland City Council, the big sort of umbrella.
Now, kind of trying to keep it positive, but can you see power struggles ahead?
In the council itself?
Or between the board and the council?
I think we've got to be there firmly, Matthew. We've got to say, look, this is our island. We know what it's about. We're not making decisions for Mount Roskill on this island either.
Yep.
We want to make decisions for our island, and I don't know if Mount Roskill wants a stadium or a park or whatever. That's a responsibility there. I wouldn't dream of making a decision for them, and I would hope people don't make decisions for us, and we seem to have had that in the past where people seemingly have said things and the council have said things, and the councillors really had no connection with the island, And we hopefully will show them that we've got responsible people, intelligent people on the island, and people are quite that will work to the for the future of Auckland and for the future of Waiheke.
Now, Herb, you've done two terms, is it, on the community board?
Yes, 6 years.
And most recently you've been the transport...
That's been a tough one, transport spokesperson. I think there has been a... We've had a sort of a grouping there, and next time around, I think we need a wider perspective. We've got an overbalance of people of one persuasion, and they do come out and they do argue about things, and you might have seen Gulf News, a lot of criticisms of my supposed lack of performance, but that comes from a small militant group of people, and they've largely been misinformed on what's been happening, really been happening, but they're quite happy to jump into print, and that's their right, I suppose, but I'm a bit disappointed that didn't have the opportunity to comment when they have had put out misinformation.
Well, I'd like to explore that, because we've got the issue with the Esplanade, has got people galvanised.
Matthew, that's really is one. Now, there was no unanimity on the island for the closure.
But there was a majority.
No, just a minute. 53 for closure, 47 against. With a margin of error of 3%, you're actually 50-50. That is not a mandate to close an asset for the island. There was not a mandate. That the transport forum, there was no unanimity. There was a significant number on the transport forum who didn't want it closed. There were also the community board was split in half, 50-50. It was only on the chairman's casting vote that this motion got through. So there wasn't unanimity. And the issue is far too important just to live on. You know, you don't do brain surgery by matter of putting up your hands and saying, oh, I think we'll cut across here or we'll cut across there. This is an asset for the island. It's a road for everybody, not just for the few walkers and the few cyclists. How many people would have been walking or cycling along there in the last month? Very few.
But that is the question, isn't it?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it isn't. It's not a point of no return if they close it for a short while.
The worry, Matthew, is once something is done, people accept it and they just move along, and it's hard to get it back to square one again. But it is. And look, the last slips on the island, Ocean View was nearly closed by Little Oney Road not so long ago. Well. How, if that was closed with a bigger slip, how do you get to the ferry? You've got to use the alternative route. It's not good enough to say they're bollards which can be removed, because there's a key that somebody has, and he may be in a police car at the other end of the island. Sometimes you need urgent measures, but it's so beautiful for everybody. Why just have a few walkers to walk that? I'd be surprised how many, in fact, take up that opportunity. And it's not necessary. The road can be made in such a way as a one-way street with little park benches, trees, and it's a lovely, iconic walkway. And look, we can't just capture it for one small, tiny number on the island. This is an island asset.
On the other hand, the board did vote to support it.
I did. No.
And you then appeared before the council.
I'm not to
speak against it.
Sorry, Matthew.
Yep.
You're right. There was a motion passed, but I went on my own behalf, not as a board member, and
right.
I signalled that I spoke on my own behalf to go there, because I think the issue is far too important for the island just to be a matter of show of hands, let's close the road. The road is too important as an asset, as an emergency route, as a transportation route, and it's far too important just to leave it there.
Another issue has been the big blue signs. You've spoken of the need for adequate signage. Are you happy with the result?
Well, we've looked at it. In some areas, there were too many signs, and yes, they're going to be adjusted and they'll be changed. The signs could have been smaller. Some people didn't want signs at all. They thought if you want one, somebody actually said, even on the community board, if you're lost, you walk along, knock on the door, and talk to the person on that house. ask to, for and ask for directions, and in this way you will actually meet islanders, and this will be the whole idea about Waiheke, this the feel of Waiheke, so we don't need signs at all. Well, that's one point of view, I suppose.
It's it is interesting that if I cast my mind back to about 15 years ago when I first moved to the island, it was difficult to discern which was the main road. Now I just know it as a matter of course.
Yeah. Well, I think the signs are sort of in keeping with national signs of, you know, the blue is the national roading sign. It's sort of an accepted accepted colour for roading throughout New Zealand, so in some ways we can't move away and put it into kaleidoscopic colours. Or
isn't it a case that if you ask the council to do some things, a council will do them in a council way? We can't have really Waiheke signs if we get them from the council.
Well, that's true, and I suppose, and also we can't micromanage things too. You know, you employ people who are professionals in the area, and they should come back with something that has professionalism about it. I would hate the community board or the local board to be involved in every minor decision making on how big the sign is to be and how big the letters should be and walk around the island to monitor those. That's not governance. You are micromanaging then. That's that type of decision really should be made by professionals in the various departments. That is not to say that you can't have a policy about it. You know, if you said, you know, we could have a policy, we'll have all the signs on the island pink. Well, if that's what we want as an island, fair enough. But the larger issues could be decided that way. But I don't think it's our job. As we did, we drove to every street corner and looked at that and looked at that. That's micromanaging it. In fact, well, but having said that, it was actually the staff member who came with us and actually had the answer to before we even complained about it, because he so often said, well, look, yes, I think, well, we don't need a sign. That's the wrong place for the sign to be in any event. We should move it here, or we don't need that here and there. But it came from the professional who was with us.
We've also, many have emphasised the importance of the island having a strong, united voice. Now, you've shown your willingness to be a dissenting voice over the Esplanade thing. I'm not, you know, that's an important point in politics, but are there any issues, other issues you'd be willing to appear in contradiction of board decisions?
Well, I think, people, if you're elected, I hope you're elected for the person you are, for your point of view and your common sense that you may be perceived to have. And I think I would like to carry that sort of common sense through. For example, the other day there was an issue about closure of roads at Man of War Bay, but it was a Court of Appeal decision which ordered the road to be closed. Well, one of the community board members thought we should write to the Minister of Mines or the Minister of Public Works and asking him not to take part in the process of it. It's kookiness. I mean, that has no relevance whatsoever. And here was a motion coming up for something to write to the Minister of Public Works not to pursue this closure scenario. It had no relevance, no common sense about it. We've got to guard against those sort of things.
Isn't that just a token, though? We know that the Constitution requires that the government departments make their rulings, and you may not have an influence on that, but by making a token gesture, you show your opposition.
Well, if you've got a decision by the Court of Appeal, if you want to appeal against that, you go to the Supreme Court, or used to be able to go to the Privy Council. That's the way you go. You don't sort of go and write to the clerk of mines and coal mines and ask him to change the whole course of things. That doesn't work, does it? I mean, that's completely out of his realm of responsibility, and he'd just put it in the waste bin.
There's always the opportunity for the David Garrett response, which is, although the court found that, the court was wrong, and so therefore we don't agree with it, and we don't have to disclose that. Now, are you familiar with the Tourism Industry Association's briefing paper for local government?
Well, I saw the tourist. I've seen it in many aspects, but I must admit I haven't actually read the actual document that was presented. No.
Right. Now, it can be argued that tourism's one of the most significantly significant aspects of the island's future with intensive accommodation, heavy vehicles, high water use, waste disposal. What do you think an island community should do to balance the economic benefit of tourism with environmental issues?
You've got to be sensitive about it. At the present time, I feel that tourism has a very soft footprint on the island. People come off the ferry, they visit the vineyards, they visit restaurants, they hop on the bus and they go back home again.
Yeah.
And they do keep the economy going, and I think we need to have a sustainable economy on the island, that people can get jobs locally, that that they earn money locally, and I think tourism is a vital aspect of producing that economy, that sort of cash flow for islanders, and it can be done sensitively. I wouldn't like whole busloads and busloads of tourists coming through and stopping outside my place or anybody's place for that matter. But that's sort of a distance too far at this point in time. We can cope with tourists that are here at the moment. We can cope with many more tourists, and we should encourage them to purchase our wines, to purchase our olives, to purchase local art products and so forth. And I think that way, that's the only economy we have here, and that's the only business we've got in that sort of field of being able to introduce money.
We have a lot of day trippers come to the island. Do you think there's more future in getting people to stay for longer?
Well, we should encourage that. We'd encourage the domestic bed and breakfast places, and there's money coming through there. People would enjoy the island. We like showing off our island to our visitors. I certainly do. I'm very proud of the island, and I take them along the Esplanade normally, but I suppose I'll have to walk from now on.
Well, yes, they could possibly walk, and you can drive around and meet them at the other end. In the last week there's been some concern about the level of increase in Fuller's Waiheke fares. Do you believe the board should have a role in addressing the cost of transport? And we've got subsidy issues as well there.
Well, I think that issue should be looked at again. And, you know, there are issues about subsidies which need to be looked at. Every other transport operator throughout New Zealand seems to be getting a subsidy to travel by train from Auckland to Papakura is, what is it, $4 or something like that. It's not much more on the train, I suppose, I think. But so that's heavily subsidised. I saw one of the comments from one of the candidates in the Gulf News saying that once we get the subsidy, we're in line for being charged a transportation rating, transportation sort of levy in our rates or something like that. There could be issues there, so we should look at the unintended consequences as well. But having a relatively reasonable cost for ferry trips to and from Auckland is important for Waiheke as an economy. If you get the costs being too much, there will be a tipping point where individuals who wish to work in Auckland will say this is too much. That, coupled with your parking fees and so forth, there could be a tripping factor that is too much. We won't go there. Once that happens, then you will have a total reduction in service. If people don't come here to use the ferries, you'll get lesser ferry trips will happen. That'll be a downward spiral, I would think, Matthew. That.
So you're saying subsidies and supervision of fares is something to be looked at?
It certainly is, because bearing in mind, and I'm sure Fullers are aware of that issue, if you pitch those fares too high, people just won't travel. And there are about 1,200 people travel from the island every day.
Yep.
And that's a sort of few million dollars per year that comes from the economy. I'm sure we've actually broached that subject with them, and when I was with FUG, that would have been one of the issues we continuously raised to them as the fares went up. That, you know, you're getting to a point that may prove to be too much, the straw that broke the camel's back, Matthew. You know, and I'm sure they're aware of that, but that doesn't help the commuters, their awareness, because it's going to be pricey. And to what extent will you say, look, I'd much rather rent a house in the city and then I don't have to go through that effort?
I think the council's got a planning point of view that they wish to increase the commuting population so that we actually have a wider range of income on the island and actually utilise the housing over here and
yes,
actually
yeah.
make it so that not everybody's actually living in an apartment in New Lynn.
Yeah, yeah.
A few other issues are coming from listeners. Do you see a role for the board in supporting calls for limits of cell phone tower placement?
Well, I think there ought to be an input about placement of towers, because I certainly wouldn't want one in front of my house. But that's an important facility for communication as for the island. And and as far as cell phone towers themselves are concerned, the issue of whether they are dangerous or not and their radiations, well, I think we can only go with the best expert advice that's there at the moment. You know, it may be wrong, like Galileo wasn't very popular, at the end proved to be right about the Earth not being the centre of the universe. But until that happens, I think you can only go along with the best scientific advice that's available. And at this point in time, we seem to have the right radiation levels covered. They could be decreased, perhaps, or whatever. But the best information is there that we were working towards it. As far as placement is concerned, that's another matter, and therefore that has to do with the visual pollution and the likes. But I would not go along with the idea that they should disappear from our island and that we should go back to smoke signals.
Should they have to seek a resource consent on a notified basis?
Well, I suppose when you're putting a cell phone in, it affects a lot of people, and so it should be at least notified to the people in the vicinity. I'm not sure whether you should go through the process of advising all of Auckland that you want a cell phone tower at Oropu, for example. You know, you've got to use some common sense there.
Yes, I think people get a suspicion that something sinister is happening when they find a decision's already been taken and they haven't found out about it. I think that's one of the issues there.
That's always an issue, I suppose.
On the other hand, I guess a decision will be made and not everybody will like it.
I'm well used to that, Matthew, yes.
What do you think should happen regarding the placement of the library and the service centre in Onaroa?
Well, look, one thing we have done, I think, with the community board, even though we are supposedly only had an advocacy role and not a delegated, no delegated powers as such, but we managed to ensure that the library site is future-proofed. Now, we were totally against the service centre coming, being involved in here, because it doesn't make sense at all. But we're faced with a situation of, do you want a library or don't you want a library? And if we fall off the sort of the program for works now, and we might say, oh, look, we'll redesign the library again or so forth, I think we'll fall back into a sort of a category of works that we might be at the bottom of and there may not be the funds for it. At least we're building the library here. There will be an interim service centre that'll be part of it. It'll be very soon will be shown to be totally inadequate and totally impractical to have trucks and workers coming and workmen coming here to find out what the plans are all about and the parking isn't here. It'll soon show itself to be an impractical use of the site. This is a library site, and once it's built, I think we'll have a magnificent place for it, and I'm sure the next local board, with the power that it has, may very well move more quickly to suggest that the service centre be promoted at where it is at the moment.
In Belgium Street.
Yes.
So there's no plan to sell off Belgium Street
Well, you never know your luck in a big city, I suppose. things do happen, and you've got to be vigilant about these things, because, you know, there could be somebody there, some report being written in some of the sort of dungeons of this council, suggesting that. I mean, you've got to look at that. You know, is this what should happen? I certainly would be totally against it. I think this should be the future place for the library, and Belgium Street is ideally suited for those sort of works of construction works and planning and the main service office.
Do you support the board working towards Waiheke becoming a UNESCO Biosphere Reserve?
Well, I think that's far too early to go along that course, in my view, Matthew. Some of those ideas we all really do have about making Waiheke and keeping Waiheke a sustainable community, that and sort of promoting all the good things about Waiheke and so forth, which is part of what I understand the UNESCO Biosphere idea supports as well. But to implement those, I can't see the local board having any time whatsoever to go to do something as complex as that, whether it's a good thing or not a good thing. We haven't got the time for it, I don't think. The local board will be committed to, as I said at the start, staking its claim for its powers. What will our power be with the ones we're supposed to be getting? Those other issues, to us, they're good to be to perhaps to look at, but they could be quite costly. John Collings actually mentioned that Noosa was involved, and Noosa is a wonderful place to visit, and I enjoy being there. I'm a great supporter of Noosa. But they did come back and said, look, there's some, it's not for free, and you need an infrastructure to support that, and that can't be staffed by volunteers to make it successful. They're getting tens of thousands and even hundreds of thousands of dollars of financing to keep that project going. So it does come with a cost. And the problem could be, it may come also with a whole lot of regulations, regulatory matters, which again would be of interest.
So you're sort of saying wait and see on that one?
Yes,
and
certainly.
If say the majority of the board supported it, would you?
Well, I think if they did, then I would see that as not being a sort of practical, a common sense use of their function for Waiheke. I think they're more important things right now that are wastewater, reticulation issues, which I noticed somebody wants to put reticulation into Waiheke. There are other more important issues to focus on, and if we just decide to go down that course, we're just wasting our time, because we haven't got that sort of time frame, we haven't got the energy, we haven't got the infrastructure to go down that road. I feel there are issues which the roading is an issue we should be looking at, and footpaths and all those sort of basic things, needs of people on the island, and to utilise that sort of energy in something that is as huge and complex as that and has all sorts of issues about it, I don't think it's a practical use of the local board's time, and I certainly would go and argue against it.
Oh, well, I think you made your point quite clear there. Herb Romanyuk, candidate for the Waiheke Local Board, thank you very much.
I enjoyed being here. Thank you, Matthew.
What a beautiful day it is today, eh? Cloudy weather notwithstanding. It's Island Live, 14 minutes past 11, and we're joined by Daughter Ray. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Now, you're here as the organiser of Junk to Funk.
That's right. I'm organising it again this year. I organised it last year, and I'm pleased to be back as the coordinator this year.
Now, just to give us 40 words or less, what is Junk to Funk?
Okay, so Junk to Funk is a show that's been running on the island since 2003, so it's in its seventh year now. It's about reframing how we think about waste. It's about seeing waste as an opportunity and making cool and interesting things and clothes out of recycled materials.
That seems to cover it all. You've been running workshops?
Yeah, we've been doing construction clubs for the last few months. So people have been coming in and getting materials, my office is completely full of rubbish that people drop in, and then we have construction clubs where people come and use that rubbish to create their costumes
Are there any sort of gold dust items that turn up in the recycling and people, oh, you go, oh, gosh, I better save those. People have been asking about that particular thing.
Yeah, well, we had this very interesting thing happen with bottle tops. So we, lots of people have been bringing me bottle tops and I haven't known what to do with them. But me and another woman, Charlotte Parks, we've made this amazing mosaic. So now we're kind of happily accepting bottle tops, whereas before I was not quite happy with the huge amounts we had. But it looks fantastic, so we've got a good use for them.
Oh, that's good. Any other, have you got music lined up for the night?
Yep, don't want to give too much away, but we've got music, we've got performance, and we've got dance. We're going to cover all bases there.
It'll be a family show. What sort of time does it start?
It starts at 6 o'clock. Doors open at 5:30, and this year there's going to be something different happening with the you can actually buy, if you want to, you can auction, do a silent auction on some of the entries. So we're opening the doors at 5:30 and there'll be a chance before the show to go and suss out all of the items and bid on them if you want to.
Well, sounds good.
Yeah.
Chance to put your money where your mouth is.
That's right. And I think it's about really giving recycling a place in our lives, you know, saying that it's worth something and you know, it's got a value to it.
Right.
Yeah.
And a large number of entries?
Yeah, about the same as last year. So we're at about 40 at the moment. I love Waiheke, I really do, but people are still bringing entries in.
So the idea
better late than never, I guess.
Register early doesn't quite get through.
Doesn't quite get through, but that's fine. We're dealing with it. And I think it will be a fantastic show. There's some really good categories this year. And as always, some pretty amazing things that people are doing.
Mainly younger students, older people in between?
Good mix. We've actually got lots of young, as we always do, young people, but we've even got some a group, the Care and Craft group have put an entry in, so they're from 30 to 100 years old.
Excellent.
Yeah, awesome.
It's going widely across the
island. There's a good range of ages, yeah. Everyone's getting on board.
And, of course, everyone's dying to win the big prize. What is it, a year in Fiji or something like that?
Yeah, we've always been really lucky with our support from the local businesses on the island, so they donate prizes and prize money, and there's different prizes. There's a winner and a runner-up for each age group in each category, and it ranges from about $50 to $300 worth of prizes. So if you win as an adult, you're up for a big prize of $300.
Whoopee.
Yeah.
Sounds good. And really you're raising awareness for your parent organisation being the Waste Resource Trust.
Yeah. Well, it's taken on a life of its own, and it's definitely ties up what we kind of think about waste, but it's got so much more. It's got so much about, you know, community involvement, and it's a fantastic event for the island because it does cover so much of performance and what we're all about in terms of waste.
I guess also it puts a fun aspect onto it. It's not all about washing out your dog food tins.
Yeah, that's right. And so in the past, Jung Defunk has been often those really kind of crazy costumes.
Yeah.
And I think that's what those categories do. It kind of does draw attention to the fact that there's all these possibilities with waste, but we're kind of trying to change it a little bit this year as well by the including some other categories which are much more practical. So we've got a streetwear category, which is actually about changing something and being able to wear it every day. And that's the same as the junk to functional category. So that's actually making something that you could use on a daily basis and it actually works. And that's, I mean, it is great to really draw attention to recycling and the need to use our resources better, but it's also actually a really practical thing to do as well.
Well, thanks very much. I've been talking to Daughter Ray from the Waste Resource Trust. And Junk to Funk's happening when?
6 p.m. Saturday the 2nd of October at Tahurahi Hall.
And that's on Donald Bruce Road for
that's
those
right.
who have difficulty navigating around the island, even with our big blue signs. Thanks very much, Daughter.
Thank you.
You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke People, Events and Issues, brought to you by Island, Art, Craft, Giftware, Clothing and Bric-a-Brac, Ocean View Road, Onirua.
This is Island Life and I've got Josephine from Waiheke Adult Literacy here. Good morning.
Hi Matthew.
And you've got an upcoming course.
Well, there's two new courses starting at Waiheke Adult Literacy next term. On Wednesdays, starting on the 20th of October from 10 to 12, is Maths for Parents. They're both free courses, I should say. And Maths for Parents is to help parents help their children with their homework, the maths homework, or if you would like help with your maths in general, you don't actually have to be a parent to go to the course. You can just go to help your own maths.
A lot of people get switched off maths because they remember the dry and dull maths classes at school. Is this going to be different?
Yes, Wendy is a patient and lovely person. She's very into the idea that you have to be relaxed to learn, and she doesn't think that you can not do maths. She thinks you need it explained to you in a different way.
I see. So it's, the idea that people have a mental block, it is just that, it's a mental block. It's not a...
You just need to be helped in a different way, explained the theory in a different way.
And can it be fun?
It can. It can be games and, you know, all the courses are quite a laugh, actually.
you mentioned two courses. What's the other one?
The other course is one I'm starting on Friday, the 22nd of October, and that's free as well. That goes from 10 to 12 for 8 weeks, and it's making comics, and it's a course for women. I'm trying to encourage women to tell their stories through comic form, and comics are a huge medium for telling all sorts of stories, from diary to adventure or day-to-day kind of happenings, really. You can tell any story, retelling fairy tales.
And do you need a certain level of skill to join?
All literacy abilities and all drawing abilities are welcome.
Well, there we go. So that's Making Comics, starting
the 22nd of October, Fridays 10 to 12. And Wendy's taking the Maths for Parents course on Wednesdays 10 to 12, starting on the 20th of October. Both courses are free, and you can contact Waiheke Adult Literacy on 372 9868.
Well, thanks very much. That's Josephine from Waiheke Adult Literacy. Just had a bit of breaking news here, which is that there's a bit of a problem over at the library and the artworks main area, and the library's going to close shortly. They've got an issue with a bit of flooding there. So if you're planning on a trip up to the library, maybe put it off till Monday, because it is they're struggling under a bit of pressure at the moment. But there's a lot of things happening in the library. I'm sure they'll get that sorted out quickly. And I've got Rosalie from the library with me right here. How are you?
Oh, very good. And good morning to all the wonderful Waihikians who are listening to the radio of Radio Waiheke.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, it's great to be here, Matthew. And with school holidays just started, grossology is the big word at the library.
Ooh.
Grossology and worms and cockroaches. And we have already some limericks. There's a limerick competition, and so you can make up a limerick about something gross and put it in for a good prize, or you can make a recipe of a witch's brew, and here's some examples. Shakespeare's witch's brew: fillet of a fenny snake in the cauldron, boil and bake, eye of newton, toe of frog, wool of bat and tongue of dog, adder's fork and blind worm sting, lizard's legs and owlet's wing, for a charm of powerful trouble, like a hell broth, boil and bubble, double, double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble. Famous last words.
Mm.
Yes. So I think some of our inspired Waihikians could come up with some great witches' recipes and put them in for the competition. Now, also, on Wednesday at 11 o'clock, the Grossology will be doing worms, and there'll be competitions with worms, and there'll be things to do with worms, possibly like how to make a worm farm. So these are for the older children, school children, definitely.
Yep.
From 5 to 12 at the library, and it's free and wonderful and always very, very popular. The following Wednesday at 11 o'clock, they'll be talking about cockroaches and exterminating them, but that's going to be on a totally different level, I think, care of computer games.
I see.
Now, next Saturday, October the 2nd at 10:30, we're having memories because it's Heritage Week and the whole of Auckland is celebrating wonderful things. Now, I've been lucky enough at Senior Citizens to listen to some of the stories told by our elders. So we're getting some of those people in and we've asked some other people who have early memories of the island and to come and talk about it and to show us some of their memorabilia. So we're going to prepare a little display for that. So that'll be morning tea and Bickies while you listen to some of the stories and memories around a table of some of our senior citizens. So that's 10:30 next Saturday.
Sounds good.
Yes. Now, to books, I have discovered this wonderful person called Margaret Mee. I must admit, I saw the name and thought, that's a family connection through marriage, but I'm definitely claiming this one.
Family connection with you?
Yes.
Because I was thinking
Hennahan married a Mee.
I was thinking of Arthur Mee, who used to write all the children's encyclopedias.
How wonderful, I'd forgotten them. I will claim them too.
Well,
yes,
there we go.
Yes,
but anyway, Margaret Mee.
Yes.
What's she do?
She was an English woman who was an incredible, gifted artist, and she loved sketching flowers. And she married this man, and her sister went over to São Paulo in Brazil, and they did very well there. So she and her husband decided to go, and her husband set up a graphics business there. And she got interested in drawing the local flora. And then she and a friend made this trip to the Amazon, and that's what started it all, because she was sketching flowers that nobody had seen or very few had seen. In fact, they've named some flowers after her because the journeys that she's making are just riveting stuff. Talk about exploring. And this happened in the 1960s. Various tributaries way up the Amazon and climbing up mountains. It's just absolutely amazing, as well as the illustration. So if you're interested in exploring, interested in plants, interested in sociology, it's all in Margaret Mee's book, In Search of the Flowers of the Amazon Forest. But you won't have it for a little while because I'm only halfway through.
Oh, okay,
so
then.
It's so good. Normally I can skim read very quickly or speed read, but with this I'm so enjoying it, Matthew.
Lavishly illustrated.
It is absolutely brilliant. And also for artists in the community who are interested in flowers, we've got a new book called Botany for the Artist, which is absolutely gorgeous. And one I did read, and it's a very quick read, is Australian Flower Painters, Women of Flowers in Australia, from eight who painted them from 1830 onwards. There's not many, but oh my goodness, their lives. What wasn't said, you know, like an English woman from a gentle family married this soldier son of an elegant family. Next thing, he's whipped off to Australia. Tasmania in the 1830s, what a place to be. So it doesn't go into their backgrounds very much, but you can use your imagination. But the paintings, oh, just dazzling. So that's a book to look out for too.
And they were at the forefront of scientific knowledge there back in the...
Of course, you know, of course.
We have these
people
like Wallace and Darwin at the stage. Drawing, you know, everyone thinks of Charles Darwin and monkeys and that sort of thing. He did a lot of his work on orchids and barnacles, I believe.
Exactly, yes. Flowers, you know, as well as being de rigueur for a lady of society to be able to do delicate watercolours, I mean, a lot of the women develop lifelong passions for the different species and the different types, and they advance knowledge. And now, gradually, this is coming out. So it's a wonderful subject, and just ask at the library if you're interested, and we'll be able to tell you. But Margaret Mee is definitely a star that I've never discovered. I remember years ago reading one about... what was her first name? Something North. And I actually, when I was in London, made a point of going to Kew Gardens, which I was going to see in any case, but I made a point of going to see a special room there, which is full of her paintings. And again, she went, her father was a traveller and explorer, so she started, and of course she'd had years of experience travelling with her father, who was quite wealthy. So she carried on when she was left on her own and bequeathed them all to Kew Gardens. And that area is just like being in the middle of a jungle forest with surrounded by brilliant, brilliant colours. You can almost hear the monkeys. It's just glorious. So here's Margaret Mee, who's doing things that are even more specialised in places she was often the first person there. And there's a hilarious story how one of the chiefs, she had her blonde hair very long, and she'd wear it long because it got so wet it would dry out faster in various humidity of the Amazon. And this chief decided he would like to cut her hair because she was such going to be a good member of the tribe. And she thought, to be traditionally shaved and her scalp made red, she just thought, wah! So she told a little fib and she said, I'm very sorry, but if I go back home with my hair cut, I won't be able to get in the door. So the chief relented. And I thought, well, that was caused, you know, keeping your wits about you.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
And tell me, are you involved with the Waiheke Book Festival coming up on the following week?
Oh, yes, yes. That's on the following week. So we'll be definitely talking and going to that. And as a matter of fact, we're putting a display up at the moment, and we've got the little forms you can fill in so you could possibly win a ticket. So come into the library to win a ticket, except you'll have to wait for an hour or two. So if you want to come in and get your books, just ring us to see if we're back open again. We hope the plumbers will
fix
this
problem. So you're hoping to reopen later this afternoon?
Oh, I would think so. The plumbers on Waiheke are usually extremely efficient.
Well, they have to be quite responsive with the sort of issues we have from time to time.
Yes, indeed. And issues is the great word at the moment.
Yes,
okay,
indeed.
Enough said.
So anyway, that's the Words on a Small Island Book Festival. That's on the 8th to the 10th.
That's right. And it'll be great having some of these wonderful people. I'm particularly looking forward to the chef, Julie Leclerc, and then the Sarah Quigley. There's C.K. Stead.
Yep.
There's a lot of wonderful people coming to the island.
Young novelist, was it Charlotte Grimshaw? Well,
yes,
she seems young to me anyway.
Yes, definitely.
Yep. Okay, then, well, thanks very much. That's Rosalie from the Waiheke Community Library here, and she'll be doing all sorts of activities next week with the school holiday program up there at the public library.
You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, and the interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. They're also available as a download from our website www.waihekeradio.org.nz. Island Life is brought to you by Island, the shop with Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Island, Ocean View Road, Onirola.